You are listening to Dynamite in the Brain with your hosts Brian Smith and Anthony Askew, with special guest Bradley Meek. Tonight's episode, You Are What They Eat.
Your life's gone down the drain, your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame, Dynamite in the Brain.
Thanks for listening. On today's show, we take a trip back to 2006 to take a look at Masaaki Yuasa's Kimono Zume. And joining us tonight from Anime Now, it's Bradley Meek.
Hello.
Hello.
You pronounce the title of this show with much more dignity than I have when I've been practicing trying to out loud on this podcast.
I pronounce it with much more dignity than I will say it in next week's episode, which we recorded before this week's. Because that was based on a 9-year memory of the
show.
How
did you say it then? Because I can't remember how you said
it. It's Kimono Zume. I think I've been pronouncing it Kimono Zume, but they definitely say mono in
the show.
Actual show.
Okay.
So yeah, this is 2006 show about shape-changing monsters known as flesh eaters that are at large in modern day Japan. And there's a group of swordsmen called the Kifuken whose job it is to hunt them down. And the story follows the heir of the Kifuken, Toshihiko, and a parachute instructor who he falls in love with called Yuka, and she falls in love with him. And there is one problem to this romance, and that is that Yuka is a flesh eater. Well, technically speaking, there's lots of problems with this romance, but that's the main one at the start. Turns out there's many more hidden problems they weren't aware of. Or the viewer wasn't aware of, because it turns out that Toshihiko. I always forget there's two H's in the middle of his name.
Even when reading it again and again, I'm like, well.
So I want to call him Toshiko. Yeah. No, there's Toshihiko. Because we learned that he is aware of some of the hidden things to the viewer. And yeah, so this is directed by Masaaki Yuasa, written by him as well. And the character design animation director, overall animation director, we'll get into that a bit later, is Nobu Take Ito, who worked on other Yuasa projects like Kaiba, Ping Pong, Tatami Galaxy, and he also was the animation director and character designer on Giovanni's Island that we saw last year. I think we mentioned it then that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars as Yuka, Hikaru Shina, who I think of roles I know was Hikaru in Ray Earth, and I also noted that she was Miles Tails Prower in Sonic the Movie.
Some title. Some character to play.
Toshihiko is played by Hidenobu Kiyuchi, who is the voice of Whole Horse on the TV JoJo's. And he's the dub voice of Paul Rudd on Ant-Man. I don't know whether he's the dub voice of Paul Rudd.
I was about to ask that because it doesn't seem... He's a bit serious for old Paul Rudd. Young Paul Rudd.
I don't know. Paul Rudd's always very deadpan, though. Yes. Everything he does. That's quite kind of how he works. It's like you can ask him to do the most ridiculous stuff and he'll still deliver it fairly straight.
But maybe he's only just got a dub with Ant-Man because it's a big deal. Yeah.
Could be. I didn't go and check because I could see Paul Rudd being this character because this character veers from being super serious to doing some goofy stuff or having to do some goofy stuff, let's say.
So you're penning Paul Rudd in for the live action?
Right? Yeah, live action version.
Okay.
Then there's the character of Oba is played by Kenji Utsumi, who is probably, I'd say, the biggest name on the cast. He played Rao in Fist of the North Star, Senbei in Dr. Slump, the voice of Shenlong in Dragon Ball, and Alex Armstrong in both Full Metal Alchemists. He's one of the rare characters who got to keep the voice across both. His son, Bon, is played by Daisuke Guri, the original voice of Mr. Satan. Robin Mask, we watched Pat Labor TV recently, or Pat Labor TV, rather, and he played Hiromi, the really tall guy in that. If you look at his cast list, his list on Anime News Network, rather, he plays lots of large people. I think on the Eurosite Sura, he's like large businessman. Which fits because Bon, as we get to, is a very tall person. Ri The other female lead is played by Shino Kakinuma, who doesn't have that much against her name in anime. She was Naru, Usagi's best friend in Sailor Moon.
And the original one or Crystal?
Yeah, the original one.
Oh, and okay.
She was the replacement, Videl in Dragon Ball Kai. I think the Videl's now back to the original voice actress. Kazuma, who is Toshihiko's brother, is played by Hiroyuki Yoshino. I think the only thing I know him from is the voice of Meow in Space Dandy.
Oh, that's a good one.
Very different voice here. And Toshihiko and Kazuma's father, Jiuzu, is played by Jun Hazumi. And I don't think it was anything I knew him from, but I did note that he played Jesus Christ in the Flying House anime. That biblical anime. And so, let's get into this. Our history with the show. Is this the first time seeing it for you two?
Yes.
Or had you seen it before?
Yes, it's the first time for me as well. I had wanted to watch it, but I had kind of put it off because I've loved Masaki Yuasa, but he kind of had gotten a reputation for not doing very well on shows that are his original thing. Like Mind Game and Kaiba, I think, were two shows that I'd heard that were visually impressive, but storytelling fell short. And while that was kind of true for me in Kaiba, not sure I agree with that with Kimi no Mozume.
No, anyway. I definitely was, and Mind Game's not his original either. So Kaiba and Kick Out are the original pieces. No, Mind Game's based on a manga.
Mm-hmm.
same as Ping Pong and Tatami Galaxy is based on the book.
Right.
Yeah, so this and Kaiba are sort of the two-piece set for when he was doing stuff for Wow Wow, the satellite station.
This is the first time I've seen it as well. I didn't really know what to expect going into it. I hadn't seen Ping Pong, Mind Game, Kick Heart. But I just feel like he should be allowed to do whatever he wants. I genuinely feel that way. I feel, don't ask him questions. Just give him time and give him space and just allow him to do what he needs to do.
I think that was pretty much the case here.
Yeah.
Because I believe it started off with somebody else co-writing it and they left the project, so it just ended up him being in charge of the story. Other script writers doing individual episodes, but he was in charge of plotting out the entire thing. And as I understand, they plotted it out kind of as they went. Like, they didn't have an ending planned and work to the ending. It kind of shows. Yes, yeah, I'd say that as well. Yeah, so I saw this when it was originally airing and getting fan-subbed back in 2006. I haven't watched it since then. But it did stick in my mind as something I really liked at the time. And there's definitely scenes which stuck in my mind. Coming back to it this time, there was like bits of the plot I'd forgotten. But yeah, the climactic scenes I remembered, and there was like individual scenes throughout where I could...
There's a lot of really pretty set pieces in this show. It's kind of an animator showcase. Stylistic.
Literally in two episodes.
Yes, it is. It is one animator showcase, yeah.
So what did you think of it, watching it for the first time?
I really liked it. It's rough in places, especially story-wise, but it has... such a distinctive visual style, and it keeps building off of a bare bones Romeo and Juliet plot in some really interesting ways. And while it doesn't always follow through on that in ways that I wish it did, it's thoroughly entertaining throughout.
How about you, Anthony?
Well, I watched the first episode a couple of weeks ago and I was kind of like, oh, this is just going to be action throughout. And I would have accepted that, but it's far from it. And I think you do get, when this show's at its best, it's not necessarily following the main characters. There's a few episodes here and there where they're not the centric point. I think those are the most interesting ones. Not to say that the story itself is not an interesting story, because I like it. Like, you instantly get thrown in, like, this is what you're dealing with for the series, and just get ready for a bit of a crazy ending, that's all. Like, even in this weird world where you, it's pretty believable. I believe everything in it, except when it goes a little nuts at the end. When I was like, kind of like, oh, that caught me off guard. That's, bear in mind, that's a show about demons, and, well, things eating people, and I was still surprised by where it went at the end.
The show has a strange tone as well, or it has very sharp tone shifts, because it will go from very dark to very, very whimsical. And sometimes it will be both at once, which is strange, but it kind of works sometimes. I'm thinking particularly of the way it handles violence. Sometimes the violence feels consequential, and other times it feels like Looney Tune logic.
Oh, I mean, you're tipped off to the Looney Tune logic quite early on.
Yes.
The one time when they're chasing one of the Flesh Eaters down and they're distracted by projecting a hologram of sexy women.
Yeah, there's that.
Total Looney Tunes. That's...
But there's also when the father is essentially killing the stepmother to achieve Kino Nozome.
Yeah.
And so there's artistic and kind of emotionally affecting violence like that as well.
Yes, yeah, it has it. But whenever they do it, they know what they're going for. It's not
yes,
like they do
yeah.
one and accidentally get the other one.
And then it'll be really serious 1 second, and then you'll get a scene with the monkey. And
yeah, the climactic fight at the end as well was kind of a mix of yeah. both, wasn't it?
Yes, which is I was fine with. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot the first time, and I enjoyed it even more now. But I will say. The thing I really like about it is the start, because it kicks off, as you say, pretty
oh,
fast
yeah.
straight
Great
away.
Great opening scene.
Stuff which you think is going to be like a mystery which would last the entire series is resolved like within 4 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the ending 4 episodes seems sluggish compared to the start.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It does.
They spend a lot of time at one location for like the last few episodes, where it's felt like they were zipping around the country up to that point. But that said, those 4 episodes are still very good. It's just compared to the rest of the series, they probably feel worse than they actually are.
So in regard to next week's episode, would you have put this higher or lower than what you do?
I think I might have put it higher.
Okay.
But yeah, I was enjoying it a great deal.
Okay.
Particularly the bits I'd forgotten in terms of sort of how all the plot fitted together. Because I thought the plot didn't fit together in my head, perhaps influenced by other people's reviews of it. But I think it fits together quite well in terms of what the villain's trying to achieve and how it scans back across the previous episodes.
So what was he trying to achieve? Because the way I read it was... He was basically crazy, and while he had internal rationalizations for what he was doing, he wasn't being honest with himself, or it felt like it didn't really make sense.
No,
and I wasn't entirely sure it was supposed to.
No, I think he was clearly insane. His plot
yes.
made sense in terms of how he was achieving it, why he was achieving it. He had multiple reasons, none of which really held up to much scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the mechanics of his plot, that made sense. And it explained things from the very first episode. Because the mystery of the very first episode is that normally when they fight these flesh eaters and kill them, they stay as a flesh eater after they've killed them.
Right.
But these ones they're encountering are turning into humans. So if they think there's like a new strain, and there is a new strain, but it's slightly more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm.
And that escalates as the series progresses.
They definitely seed that early on. I think part of the reason why I wasn't particularly satisfied with the ending, besides the sluggishness of the last few episodes, even though they are great, I think it's because I was less interested over time in Oba's storyline and more interested in what was going on with the rest of the Kifiku and I would have wanted to know more, for instance, of about the Flesh Eaters and kind of their perspective on their history, because we only really get one side to the story.
You do get that, what's Yuka's ex-boyfriend? He does mention that, like, humans came and slaughtered all of his kind, like, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And we know
right.
that, we know that from the, mm-hmm. the earlier episodes where we get the flashback to, Toshihiko's father and Oba and Jin in their youth, who's Rei's father.
Yeah.
And so that's the events from that episode from the Flesh Eater's point of view is when he's doing this, the episode where they're torturing or pretending to torture Toshi.
That's a good scene.
That was genius. That is a really good scene. Yeah. And it instantly kind of humanizes them because they pretend to cut his arms instead of actually cutting his arms. So.
Yeah, because there's this, even in the first episode, there's the sense that they're only going after the flesh eaters when they eat flesh. Because they only go after, in the very first episode, there's these two guys talking in a bar. And one of them's talking about how great it is to eat women. And the other guy's sort of being unsure about it and also sort of sending text messages at the same time. And when they raid, they let that one go. In fact, it almost seems like he was tipping. The other one off because he puts
that's how I read that yeah
drink
yeah
to force the transformation.
See, it did, by the end I cared less about Oba and his plan. I just wanted to know about the romance of Toshihiko and Yuka. I wanted to see a conclusion to that. I honestly at that point I was like, right, just give me the romance.
I don't know, I do like your man basically chewing up the scene for those last four episodes though. It was
okay. Oh, it's ridiculous. His character is ridiculous. From when you, when is he first introduced?
He's introduced early on. I don't, I can't remember if he's there before the flashback, but he's definitely, most, once he's in the flashbacks there throughout the entire show.
He's quite
show.
Distinguishable looking as well. Even yes. when he's not wearing a furry rabbit head and.
But yeah, his sanity clearly falls apart as his body falls apart and he wears less and less clothes as the episodes progress.
Yeah. I mean, he's a good villain, but as you say, it's just those last four episodes. It does feel a little drawn out.
Can we talk about sex for a minute?
Oh, excuse me.
Go on, Bradley.
well, because there's a lot of it in this show, and I really liked how it handled it for the most part. With maybe the exception of how Rhee's dominant characteristic started to be, oh, I have really large breasts for a little while. That was kind of tasteless and felt like it didn't really fit in the show. But most of the time, I thought it handled sex and desire in a really mature and adult fashion, and that's really refreshing.
Yeah.
Part of it might be that the style of the show doesn't lend itself to puberty fuel. Mm-hmm. No. If it had a more traditional anime style, it might be guilty of that. But even then, I think just in the context of the show, and especially because of how eating flesh and how that's tied to sexual desire, like it felt appropriate. It fit the theme. It added dimension and weight to the relationship of Yuka and Toshimori. And
Toshihiko,
you're right. And I'm sorry, Harry Kane just scored a fantastic goal, so my mind just went blank. Sorry, listeners. But yeah, and it's just refreshing to see that handled so well, and you don't often get to see sex just kind of help make a relationship make more sense on screen, right?
Yeah.
You can really feel their passion throughout. And I was not into their relationship for most of the show, but that was one aspect of it I really liked.
Yeah, and it's rare that you get two characters fall in love straight away in the first episode with no farting around and anime hijinks.
I love how they do that, actually. Where he's basically just so infatuated with Yuka and he sees her face on everything. That was really like a nice touch. I've never really thought of it like that, but it's that was pretty good.
I mean, she was an anime girl who fell from the sky, but beyond that, this isn't your typical romance.
Well, no. Also, she was a 30-year-old anime woman who fell from the sky, rather than
right. But she is a monster girl, so
that is true. So maybe this is time for someone to license this while monster girls are hip. I mean, suspect the monster girls in this are not quite what the monster girl fans are looking for.
Well, it does play with the kind of body horror that Monster Musume does.
In a different sort of way.
It is in a different sort of way, but they are playing in a similar space, I think.
Yeah, I don't think those otaku ones are going to go quite as far as some of the opening sequences.
Well, Monster Musume makes it almost a fetish for how sexuality with the monsters is supposed to work. And here it just feels more like a fact of life, and it's never really explained or explored. It's just, it's part of their desire, it's part of their sex life, right?
Yeah, and I think that, but there's a sense of controlling your sexuality is controlling the monster. There's something that going on.
That's part of it.
And there's some sort of metaphor about flowers where roses seem to subdue the monster because
rose petals, the two oil and
the two monsters who we see living among humans without going on ravenous bloodthirsty trails are both said to smell of roses, and then we see Yuka's ex-boyfriend, who's another flesh eater, can control his transformations by sniffing tulips, and tulips recur constantly throughout the show. So there's something there as well. Whether that's anything beyond that, I don't know. I'm not sure it's like like something somebody had in mind, but whether they were developing that.
Speaking of which, what is the relevance of octopus as well? Why does that bring it out more, you know?
That I don't know. Whether that's just something they picked or whether that was... has some great meaning. I don't.
Because Kazuma's hair changes colour as soon as he starts eating it. There's all sorts of stuff like that.
Right. Yeah, I thought it was strange as well. It would have made more sense to me if he was a vegetarian or his father kind of enforced vegetarianism on him.
Rather than one specific.
Right. Or maybe pork would make sense to me because humans are the lawn pig. So... I don't know if you've heard that phrase before described.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, if I'd thought of a better pun, I would have been involved in the title of this episode.
But why has it took Kazuma so long? Because how old is he meant to be? Isn't he 20, like, it must be 26, 27?
Yeah, it must be something like that, because it's 25 years since his brother died.
So I don't understand how it's, not a case of not understanding, but why has it took him so long to crack and finally kind of embrace the fleshier.
Well, I think because his father's being careful not to get... So once his father's out of the way, I think that is why he starts to crack after that point. Because his father's stopping him from making these robots, which basically are just extensions of looking like a flesh eater. So obviously that's a warning sign to his father, is that your son who's a flesh eater says, hey, can we make these
make
robots
more like
I will wear?
Right.
Make me look like a flesh eater. So I think that's part of Oba's plan is to make everybody unravel.
Yeah.
By killing the father. Because he's got some sort of long, lengthy revenge plotted.
So who kills the father? Is it a clone?
I think
no,
it's Oba. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's Oba, because we can see he can shape-shift into...
Oh, of course. That makes more sense now that... Right. Because you see the clip, and you just assume it's Yuka, but obviously he's imagined it as his ex-love interest and so on.
Yes.
Whatever.
Who's also Yuka's mother.
So Kazuma and Yuka are brother and sister.
Yes. Half brother and sister. The same. Toshihiko and Kazuma are half brothers as well.
Deep. But yeah, I don't know. I expected from the first episode, you kind of expect more action, but you soon overlook that, I feel. And just get into the characters. Get into the monkey, which is absolutely ridiculous. When that monkey first shows up, it's perfect.
Yeah, and he's now the symbol of their studio.
Is he? Oh,
Yes.
Okay, that's cute. Yeah, he's drawn amazingly as well.
Yeah, and Toshihiko, basically, this monkey comes along in the first episode and beats Toshihiko and Kazuma. And Toshihiko wants to take him on as his master.
Yes.
I always felt he was going to have more bearing on... I thought the monkey was going to be someone. I don't know why, but...
He's a monkey.
Yeah,
he's really
yeah,
good at sword
he's just fight. Himself. Yeah.
I really like what they did with the monkey. I liked the whole master subplot going on, and I like that he was totally uncontrollable, unpredictable. It's never entirely clear if he teaches anything, but there's also when he deparalyzes the guy, so, God.
Yeah, that was one of the episodes which I remembered from 9 years ago, is the episode where he gets paralyzed. And
he just adds a fuck ton of whimsy to the show.
But his intention was good. Like, cause I was watching thinking, oh my God, this is awful. But I thought it was just the monkey being a monkey, but obviously his intention is to get him in the water and...
I don't know. That just made me happy.
Perhaps.
I choose to believe that the monkey is in fact a master of kung fu and fighting and knowing how to deparalyze people through mystical kung fu, but he's also a monkey and his primary concern are monkey things. Like screwing other monkeys.
Yeah, he gets a family and everything.
Yeah.
Show obviously found him at the very end of the film. And then he's a very Looney Tunes bit at the end when Oba makes a female monkey out the top of his head. Thanks, monkey. Yeah, that was one of the other big scenes I remembered was the back and forth on top of the gigantic ball that he's dropping on New Year's Eve. Between him and his son, Bon. I think that's the first scene. Oh, blimey, Bradley, stop breathing into the mic so much.
Oh, sorry.
It's like a wind going by.
Let me move it a little bit. Sorry about that. Better now?
I think so, yeah. So you've got Bon, who's Oba's son. When he first shows up, I think that's the first bit where it suddenly the reality becomes a little bit more unhinged from...
Even from monsters.
Well, yeah, it's like there's a set of rules they've given you about... There's these monsters called flesh eaters. You chop their arms off. That kills them.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden there's this man who's 2 stories tall with a giant head looking through windows. And there's no real explanation of why he's so big, but he is Oba's son. And that's part of the reason Oba's motivation as well is that people have been rude to his giant son in the past.
But you see none of that in the series. Therefore, even the guy giving him a lift in his truck, he's a nice guy to him. Everyone's nice to him.
I wonder if that's just all in Oba's head.
Yeah.
It could well be, yes. Because it seems to be. He's very overprotective of his giant son to the point where the recurring thing is that he won't let him be a shot putter. Which obviously pays off right at the end when he finally gets to be a shot putter. And I do like Bon, the son. I think he's a pretty great character. And he kind of sort of grounds it almost. He's like the most sensible character in the entire story, even though he's most ridiculous looking.
I love the episode. I think it was episode 6 where he goes from being this terrifying monster to getting a sense that, he's a really good person and there's a lot going on there.
Yeah. And I do like when he first shows up and, Yuka and Toshihiko are doing the hand signals to each other about two plans, which neither of them are understanding each other.
Yes. That was a fantastic gag.
I was quite surprised Bon did join in to kill his father. I thought he was going to take the ground, because he is a good guy. So I thought he was going to take the good guy ground and say, like, yeah, he's still my father, so you have to do it yourself.
Well, he tries to talk his father out. He's willing to go with it. But I think once that does not work, once his father's willing to kill a vast amount of people in Tokyo.
Yeah, I guess he sees...
It's also one of those indirectly killing the villains almost by accident kind of resolutions. Because they just let him fall. fall from space, apparently.
Yeah.
And there was a part of me that thought, oh, well, going on how the rest of the show has gone, maybe not even that will be enough to kill him. But no, he goes splat.
No, at that point, he is only ahead, so.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, when the first time, like, the tiny little obers appear out of his ears and are across his head, I thought, is that just in his mind? And this time I thought, again, is it just in his mind? But then I'd forgotten just how body warping he becomes by the end of the
series. So he probably did do it with his crazy mind.
Yes.
Hmm. Such a bizarre character.
But yeah, lots of people meet their grisly ends in truly grisly fashions.
Mm-hmm.
I think possibly the bit I've forgotten was him cutting Kazuma's arms off and then attaching them to his legs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, yeah. When he's pulled off screen by the arms as they try to eat him and they somehow become his legs, yeah.
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 Great bit of distraction and then revealing something even more horrific than you'd seen before.
I like when, you know, of the old trio, Jin, when he decides to become one of the Kimonozumes by cutting his own arms off. That is a...
Yeah. We should probably say the Kimonozume of the title is a hidden technique where you cut the arms off the flesh eaters and then attach them to your own body.
Yes, but you must cut your own arms off to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you're saying Jin does
it's such
that.
A great way. He cuts his first arm off, and then he stabs the sword into the ground, and then swings his arm into the blade. I was like, oh.
And that's because Oba won't cut them off for him. Yeah. And that's kind of up to that point, Oba has been sane and reasonable. It's what he sees Jin do to this village of flesh eaters is the thing, which we don't get to see, really. Is the thing which forever changes him, completely unhinges him.
Do you think that's the same village as the village where Yuka is from?
I don't necessarily think so, no. I think it's the one that your man refers to.
Yeah, him. Yeah. Yuka's ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I like the way the story keeps wrapping back on itself multiple times like that. Even in how Yuka is, I forget his name, Toshihiko? Yeah. Toshihiko's stepmother's daughter?
Yeah.
Just how closely tied everything is like that, even when it makes you uncomfortable.
Yeah, because there's no discussion of why Yuka's mother abandoned her daughter, even though she's quite clearly a good mother to Toshihiko's, because Toshihiko continually has these flashbacks. Whenever he's about to kill one of the flesh eaters, he has a flashback to his meeting his stepmother for the first time. And then rather than killing him, he shits
himself. Does he at this point know that his stepmother was in fact a flesh eater? Is that the idea?
Yes, because remember he was spying on them when
cut
his father cut
off. Yeah.
her arms.
Okay. Yeah,
and attaches
them. So that's why when he's about to kill a flesh eater, he shits himself.
Yes. But he solves that by the end of the thing by wearing adult diapers.
Ridiculous.
Now, do you think he has a bit of a complex about his stepmother, though, especially because Yuka looks so much like Harumi?
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he was attracted to her?
It could be playing into that as well, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if he found out, his reaction might be, oh, that's perfect.
Because obviously Oba's got that complex.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Can we talk about... sorry.
Yeah, because once he catches her, he does not dispose of her, does he? He keeps her around.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you're talking about when Oba catches Yuka.
Yeah. Whereas everything else he's catching, he's killing, chopping the arms.
But his idea is to keep the one with the strongest claws to give his son.
Yeah.
I think he was tipping the scales to make her the strongest one, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He wanted her to survive last.
That's over so quick, that moment where Rei dies and it's like, oh, what a shame. Because I liked her. She was a good character.
Yeah, I want to talk about her for a minute because in some ways she felt like the most interesting character, but she's kind of given shortchange by the show in some respects. I like how she's a trained swordwoman. like everyone else, but nobody gives her the time of day because she's a woman. She's stuck into administrative tasks. She has this sense of honor that is also about wanting to continue the tradition. But it also seems to be mixed with her hang-ups about Toshihiko and how she has still not really given up on him. She has such a really good tragic story, and at times it feels like it can be entirely overlapped by, oh, she also has tremendously large boobs, right? And that's such a shame.
But that is all coming from her, though. And nobody else is commenting on her tremendously large boobs. That is
it
her.
It feels like, well, it feels like the show is hung up on it as well, right?
In terms of
what it chooses to focus on. There's even a section where Yuka and Haruka do the whole, I have big boobs, you have small boobs, clearly I'm better than you, which every fucking anime does, and it's never funny. And it's just somehow worse for being here.
Yeah, and those are in both the episodes which... Actually, both the episodes which focus on her and both the solo episodes as well.
They got away with a lot for this. How much was this censored on the broadcast?
It's exactly as you saw it. Because it's on satellite, so you can get away with a lot.
Wow. Hey, this is one of the few anime where not only are there a lot of naked boobies, there's also a lot of
penis. But you don't see any dicks?
There's some dicks near the end.
I think that's the suggestion.
There's a big
dicks.
Suggestion, yeah.
There's also a lot of the suggestion
when he's
dicks.
Peeing into the cup. And...
Yeah, Toshihiko is naked for an awful lot of this running time.
Yes. There's also the censor circle over his dick while he's being tortured, and
oh, you know it's there.
So,
No,
I think there's a show getting away with far more currently running. So, again, on satellite. So, that would be Valkyrie Drive for any of those perverts out there who want to see just how far you can go on satellite.
So I guess that Wow Wow is kind of an HBO.
Yeah, I think it's more like. I don't think they've done anything particularly recently themselves. But they're still airing anime things like Kira and like OAVs and various other movies. That's what I was looking at.
But their brand is kind of similar to HBO, where we give creators a lot of leeway.
Yeah,
you want to make prestige television, prestige animation.
Yeah, let me have a look what Anime News Network list as stuff they did. I know Big O was one of theirs. They showed the entirety of Cowboy Bebop rather than whatever got broadcast on terrestrial. So production wise, they were behind the Battle Royal live action movie. Partly brain powered, obviously the thing with an opening where everyone's naked in the opening. So there you go. Maybe that's why they decided to go that way. We're on Wow Wow. Let's just make everyone naked straight on and have them never be naked in the actual show.
Whee!
Brigadoon, Chevalier d'Eon, behind Cutie Honey live action movie, Devil May Cry, Ergo Proxy, Full Metal Panics, anything else of note? Guyver, the bio-boosted armor.
That's the new one, isn't it?
Yeah. Kyber, as we mentioned before. Kino's Journey. The recent Jeeg TV series. So a lot of things in the mid-2000s. I think it's when they were peaking on this thing. Anything else of note? I think they broadcast Bacano, and I remember that being a thing, because people were arguing about, oh, Durarara did so much better than Bacano. Well, part of it, I think, is because the people who watched Bacano had already paid once to watch it by having to buy the satellite subscription. Not sure they're necessarily willing to double dip again into DVDs. And plus, I imagine, well, I must show these lots of times to get their money's worth.
You'd expect so. Because it didn't sound like they're showing that much
once
else.
You put...
Oh, am I way off?
Well, yeah, they show live action stuff as well. lots of American and British stuff. So Sopranos, South Park, I noted Little Britain, I remembered they used to show. I think they show Red Dwarf as well. Yeah, I think I learned that when I was back looking for, are there, like, Japanese fans of UK comedies? And there are, but there are, and then I realised, oh, not only are there fans, some of these comedies actually get shown in Japan.
So is Red Dwarf, like, big in Japan?
I don't think it's big in Japan, it's on the satellite channel. So, it's niche, just like three people talking about a Japanese satellite anime on a podcast is niche. But there are fans out there. Yeah, so I found on the Annie Page's review of the last episode, he translated bits of interviews which were on the Japanese release. And apparently the stated theme was, life never turns out how you expect it. Do you think that comes through in the show?
I don't think so at all. That ends. It ends basically... broadly, how you expect, right?
Well, yeah, except not for the people who didn't survive the ending. But
yeah, there might have been a lot more dead people than I expected, but it basically works out.
I think the theme is men are going to chase after women. It happens with the monkey. The monkey goes after the female monkey. What's he called? The one who goes to like the love hotel to meet up with that girl. What's his bloody name?
Oh, I can't remember. He's one of the... He's like the mirror of the story which is going on.
Yeah, which I think is a great little
story.
Right,
but his story ends poorly. Yeah. He was eaten, right? At first I thought that he had an off-screen death, which meant he'd come back in some form, but no, he's eaten.
No, because Rhee makes that clear in episode 6, because that's partly the reason why she's come... Well, at least that's the reason she's given that she's...
Well, I was hoping that the idea was everybody thought he'd been eaten, but in fact they kind of went away and fell in love. Because I don't think... Yeah.
And he would have some triumphant return at the end. Even after Rhee said something, yeah, I thought that was a possibility. But I think that really was his head on the bench at the end of the show.
Okay.
So, that's just my read of it now. It was ambiguous at first, but since it was never brought up again, I'm just assuming
he's gone.
That, yeah, he's dead, dead.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah, so let's talk about these solo episodes. Because I remembered that 7 was a solo episode. I hadn't, and then I had to double check if there was any more, and I learned that episode 11 is as well. So episode 7 was storyboarded, episode directed, animation directed, by Osamu Kobayashi, who's behind Beck and Paradise Kiss, I think his two big shows that he directed. And of course, the episode of Gurren Lagann, which caused loads of problems because of producers yelling at fans for not liking it. So what do you think of that? That's the one where Rhee shows up to seduce Toshihiko and bring him back.
Again, like I really like the broad strokes of the story. It's just, it feels a lot more fetishistic than is appropriate for this show. And to do that character justice.
You mean specifically the boob bit? Or are you also talking a bit where they're in the,
Ferris wheel cart?
No, I'm talking about how often the camera just focuses on her boobs.
Okay.
But yeah, otherwise, like, that's a really good episode. And
you can tell it's Kobayashi because of the mouths, but, the way he draws mouths is very evident in that, which is part of the reason people didn't like that Gurren Lagann episode. But I like the way he draws mouths. They always look like they're actually speaking the words.
I increasingly really appreciate functional animation that values just a lot of movement over having a consistent look. So I'm a big fan of what he does.
Yeah, shame he doesn't do it very often.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Because he's one of those guys you should have had a Space Dandy episode. I don't know what the last thing he did was. I think it was like 2011, maybe. So no idea what he's doing now. And the other episode was episode 11... which was sort of looking back at what the other guys at the Kafuken are up to and Oba's sort of corporate takeover And that was done this time. Everything. I assume the actual animation wasn't, but the writing, the storyboard, mm-hmm. the animation director, the episode director was all Hiroshi Shimizu, who did the same things on, well, he didn't write the episodes of Space Dandy, but he did episode 8 of season 1, which was the episode with Pup and the Microman fleets. Yes. And he did the episode 6 of season 2, which was the Claudian episode.
What was the...
Oh, what's that noise coming from?
It's Bradley.
Not me.
No.
I can hear it.
Hang on. Yeah.
I can hear it as well. I don't think it's coming from me.
Yeah. It was flashing up as anti-maker, but it's gone now.
Is that...
Oh, hang on. Anthony, you mute yourself. Are you mute, Anthony? Okay. I can't hear it now, so maybe that's Anthony. You put yourself back on now, Anthony. And Bradley, mute yourself.
Okay, one sec.
I can still hear it.
Let me mute. Okay, Bradley, come back and then I'll mute myself.
I'm still getting it. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, I hear it again.
So it must be you.
I can't understand where that noise is coming from. Ah, hold on.
Is there a fan?
Hold on, this is circular sawries operating next to his microphone.
That might be. Somebody's wiggled the cables. Is that any better?
Well, stop wiggling. Okay. That's much better. Yes.
That might have been what that was. That actually makes sense. Okay. Yeah.
There we go. What were we saying? The Claudian episode. I can't remember the Claudian one. Was that?
Claudian episode. It's the one where they go to the castle.
Oh, I never liked that one. I never liked it. Is that with the someone's ex-boyfriend?
No, it's the one where we learned that, what's her name? The waitress is half Claudian.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I never liked it. That was probably my least favourite episode, looking back.
You also did the Michiko and Hatching character design and was animated director on, I think, just over half of the series. And apparently he also did a solo episode of the kids' show Rita et Machin, episode 15. Which I think that show has aired on the BBC.
Okay.
Under a slightly different name. That one didn't stand out so much as being an individual, but maybe I'm just not as familiar with his style as I am, Kobayashi's. It seemed... Oh, blimey, Anthony, what are you doing? Stop wiggling it!
Yeah, it's a long shot. I've got one cable as in, like, an adapter, and I think that adapter... Well, it must be.
I'm going to come up there and take those things and wrap them around your throat if you don't stop wiggling with
them. Did it come across that loud? Oh, I thought I was doing it discreetly.
Yes,
blowing my ears out.
Discreetly.
Oh, it's bad.
Well, I've stopped now. My hands are tied. I've cut my arms off,
I'll be chopping your arms off. God. I didn't have to edit out that noise. That would have been good stuff to leave in the podcast, their response to it. But I'm afraid that's going to be lost
well,
to the
what
ages.
Can you do? What can you do?
Yeah, so he did Michiko and Hatching character design and also a solo episode of the kids show Rita and Machin, which I also believe has aired on the BBC. But I couldn't tell that was a solo episode as much as I could tell the Kobayashi one. But that's probably because I know what Kobayashi looks like at this point. In the actual entire series he was responsible for. Did you think that notice they were solo at the time?
I did not notice.
I noticed for episode 7, even though I couldn't have told you who it was, it was distinctly different enough that I thought this might be a solo episode.
Yeah. If the mouths are doing that and the episode's about sex, it's probably Osamu Kobayashi.
Yes.
I believe at the time his MySpace profile had his relationship status as swinger.
Nice.
Yeah, the only thing missing was them going to some sort of old record shop and listening to punk records. That would be the only thing to make it a full Osamu Kobayashi episode. Let's talk about the pre-credit sequences. So, this show sort of, quite a few episodes in, it starts putting these sequences before the credits run which tell little stories which have nothing to do with the main story about flesh eaters. And they're all done in vastly different styles to the main show. This is kind of where you get like an individual animator really going nuts. Mm-hmm. That's how they like. Mm-hmm. Did they work for you? Did they add anything? Any favorites?
Sometimes. I really liked the gag with the old guy who was turned on by the nurse and tried to eat her, but he had no teeth.
So he's just sucking on her head.
Yes.
I like the kid in school with his, like, girlfriend.
Yeah, that's the one which went viral. Clipped onto YouTube, yes. Some sort of what the fuck Japan type site.
Yeah, I guess without any context, it's...
I think they were fair, and I think they did put context on it. But I think when people were sharing it, they weren't necessarily in the context.
I like the war one as well with, like, the soldier guy forcing the girl to get food and stuff. And then she comes and eats them. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Boxing one's pretty cool as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they all work. I like the sort of Lovecraftian one about the folklore society.
Yeah, that one's really good.
That kind of brings into question as whether he actually was a flesh eater or just a guy who'd been reading about flesh eaters and decided to follow in their footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
The only one which I couldn't quite did sort of tie into what was going on was the guy who's saying
pills.
The defense secretary guy who's got like half a cyborg head who gets shot down.
Oh, right. And he says something like, it is not true that we are developing cyborgs while he is clearly a cyborg.
Yes.
I wondered if that was satirizing something particular to Japanese politics or society.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of ties into that. I think that's the same episode where the guys from the secret police show up, and it kind of gives the clue that the government have been in on Oba's plans for a while.
I assumed that the government was, and in fact, I had wondered if the show was satirizing the very close relationship that certain large corporations have with the government in Japan. And how thoroughly corrupt sometimes that relationship is.
Yeah, could well be. I did like Oba's sort of concrete block machine, though.
Like the helium gas.
Yeah, it kind of took Mr. Burns's trapdoor a few steps further. Yeah, it's just like, gassing them with a different... Not even to kill them, just so their voices would change so he could giggle at them before he put them into concrete blocks and dispensed with them. I did like the design of his tower, particularly how the design seemed to change from episode to episode as well.
Didn't they comment at the end of the show, like, nobody understood how that thing looked?
Yes. Because I think at one point it looks very Terry Gilliam-esque in, like, bits of photo. And also, like, when he's doing his message, which take photos, and it's suddenly the message is displayed to all these live-action photos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a creepy little moment that. It's like,
The show uses photography very well for backgrounds. It's a really good choice, and it fits the loose aesthetic very well, so.
And of course, the big problem, as great as the show is this is the one Masaki Yuasa show which isn't available in English, officially.
Mm-hmm.
You will have to use the same evil powers of the internet that we have to.
Well, I don't think Kaiba has been licensed
either. It has, in Australia.
Oh, okay. I wonder if this could have benefited from a better translation. There were moments where I thought subs were really questionable. Not as in, I know enough about Japanese to say that this is not right. It's just, it just wouldn't flow right at times.
I think the clue is the fact that they changed the subtitles for the opening theme about four episodes
in. Oh yeah, that bugged me. That really bugged me.
That was in English. That bit was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that bugged me because I was like, "Well, they're saying what they had it saying before." Is it you're talking about all that blue or whatever it is? Yeah.
Yeah, it's Orvis Blue. I think the actual title of the song is Orvis Blue.
Okay, but that still doesn't justify.
That's probably that's probably where they were clued in that they were getting the words from. But it's not the worst I've seen, is it, Anthony? We've seen much worse than this.
Yeah.
We've struggled through. And you get the gist of the story. I don't think you're missing anything from the story. But yeah, it'd be nice to get a proper Blu-ray, proper English translation of this. Having said that, proper English translations aren't necessarily right either, as the last week's episode of Concrete Revolutio, where the subtitles are saying this name of this company constantly spelt one way, and then right at the end of the episode, you actually see the name of the company in English in the animation. It's spelled a different way. And you're like, it's there. Couldn't you go back and change it when you got that far into the episode? Go on, Bradley.
I was trying to think of how to word something. Oh, wait. That's what I was thinking about. I was wondering if there is a connection between the legend of Momotaro and the story of the show that is lost in translation with the fan subs. I think somewhere along the way, they had hinted that the Samurai Order are the descendants of Momotaro, which would make the Flesh Eaters the ogres that Momotaro had originally fought.
Yeah.
And I had wondered if some of its word choices just never really came through that hinted at that in the fan subs.
You could be right, yeah, because it's not until the very end where they make a much more explicit comparison, and the comparison doesn't seem apt at that point. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you could be on something. It'd be nice to, yeah, say, I'd love to get it on Blu-ray rather than watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I was watching high-def TV rips, and they look okay, but having my own Blu-ray would be lovely. So someone get on that. Everyone's you are so crazy nowadays, so surely someone could license it.
How good is the ending theme? How good is it?
It's pretty good. I like the opening theme more, though.
I would never skip the ending theme, but I would sometimes skip the open.
Yeah, I meant to look who was doing the music, and I neglected.
I loved the music in this. It works so well. It's got a lot of style. It probably holds up well by it on its own, but it never totally dominates the show. So it's pretty much perfect for a jazz soundtrack. Ah, really liked that.
It is Kei Wakakusa. And what else has they done?
I wonder if this is somehow, if the reason this hasn't been licensed yet is it might be tied up in rights problems with Wow Wow and Old Madhouse.
Could be.
And yeah, because Danao Coil hasn't been licensed either.
Again, it has been in Australia.
In Australia as well. Mm.
So there could be something, you could be on something there, but if you want those two, Kaiba and Danao Coil, they were released in Australia, and I think they're now out. At least Danao Coil, I think, is now out in a cheaper set.
Okay, has that been released recently, or was this?
That was a few years back, but I think the recent set is more, the cheaper set, rather, is more recent.
Okay, because if you're going to license it from Madhouse now, you'll be dealing with an entirely different company. You'll be dealing with TV Tokyo, actually, I believe.
Isn't NTV, isn't it?
Or NTV? Okay, yeah, whichever television station bought Madhouse.
Yeah, and then lost interest and bought Tatsunoko Pro instead as well.
Yeah.
And they seem to be doing much more stuff with Tatsunoko Pro at this point.
Yeah.
Danao Coil Australian DVD. But again, it's only Australian, only DVD, I think. There's no...
But there's probably also some specific rights with Wow Wow as well, so... maybe the two television stations aren't interested in getting along if a foreign licensor comes in and says, hey, we want more people to see this awesome cartoon.
Yeah, it was Siren Visual in 2011 first licensed it. Let's see if they still have it. They also did Genius Party, ooh, I think, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
They're still doing stuff, so let's have a look at their catalogue. Oh, telling me to subscribe to Anime News Network. So that's the Australian version. And God, my scroll button is giving me problems.
Can you jitter?
It is, yeah, jittering. Oh, do I spell it with a U? Oh, let me look for coil instead. There's less spelling. Different.
Do you think this one show would do well if it got a UK release or US release?
I think you'd do okay with a US release.
Yeah, I agree. Mean,
we're getting a ping pong UK release.
That's a special kettle of fish.
It is. So I'm going to buy the US version. Because Yeah, because it's a special kettle of fish. I want a standard kettle of fish, not a special one.
Ah.
yeah, so Siren Visual, Deno Coil, Complete Series, Amaray Edition is $50 Australian on DVD, 5 discs.
I'd have to get a region-free Blu-ray player for that.
No, DVD player.
Oh.
Oh, DVD? Okay.
Yeah. They don't do Blu-ray, unfortunately.
Okay.
Yeah, I need to get a region-free Blu-ray player, but I'm always surprised that more Americans don't have region-free DVD players.
It feels like everyone's just moving to streaming at this point, so...
But even in the past, I was like, it seems like an essential in the UK. You've got to get a region-free DVD player. What are you doing? Because they're, like, so cheap as well. Anything else on Kimonozume? Before we move
favorite
to my
episode.
Quiz. Favorite episode? I'm trying to think. 6 is the one where he gets paralyzed, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably yes. That one.
Yep, that's
well,
my
really,
favorite
I like
well.
The one with the old people. When they go on the little journey across...
Oh,
that's
yeah,
really
that's
sad.
Oh,
yep.
Really sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think maybe my love of sadistic slapstick weighs out.
Yeah. Perhaps. But no, I like the old people one.
But yeah,
that's good.
That is a highlight. That's one you can easily, I think, more easily show.
Just, you what, yeah.
Like a
agreed,
one-off.
Agreed.
The old people one. Yeah, I think that's really nice. Some of the best writing, I think, yeah. In there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, good show. We shall do Kyber in the next year in the first quarter. We're going to do one you ask a thing a quarter. So we're all caught up. So we've just got Kyber, Tatami Galaxy and Ping Pong to do, I think.
Ooh, all right.
Because we've already covered Kickheart at an earlier date. I think when we first got our Blu-rays.
Yeah.
All excited. Yeah, so seek it out, and then just generally, when people are asking what should we license, tell them, license Kimonozume and Kyber and anything else at the same time.
And Deno Coil. Let's just throw that in as well.
Yeah, I should get Deno Coil as well. Oh, I should get Deno Coil as well.
Have you now, podcasted that yet?
No. I was going to hold off until I bought it, and I haven't bought it yet. Because okay. It used to be across 2 separate packs, which were both quite expensive.
Mm.
But for $50 Australian for the entire series, I think I might pick it up.
Let's try and do that next year. I'd like to rewatch it.
Yeah, it's one of the best looking shows of the past 10 years at this point. Yeah, still within that 10 years.
I'd say ever.
Ever?
I don't think it's any television, out of television.
Yeah.
Well, I've not seen it. I'll remember this line from Bradley for when we do it and then see. Ever.
The first episode is amazing, at least. So, yes. And that's, I remember my jaw dropping on the floor and never really leaving for that. So anyway.
Yeah, you should say, Anthony, it's a thing which was worked long on, and I don't think many of the people involved haven't done anything since it.
Put them off.
Everyone's in hope that they're working on something similarly looking good.
Okay. I'll check it out.
Right. Let's play a game of the Annie name game. I tried to think of a game involving cannibalism, but failed. So I went back to the Annie name game. Well, it's like, there's lots of shows where people eat humans, but the characters who eat humans aren't necessarily characters you're going to know, so. So I'm going to give you now instead the Annie name game, where I will list names of characters of a show from 2006, the same year of Kimonozume. And all you have to do is be the first person to jump in and tell me what show it is, but you only get one guess.
I'm good at this, Bradley.
Okay. Yeah, I remember.
And also the lists of names are a lot shorter, so get ready to jump in
2006,
quite quickly.
Okay, I'm good.
2006. Right. They're all television anime. Okay. Rin Tusaka. Saber.
Oh, Fate Stay Night.
That is correct. That's one for Bradley.
I always pronounce it Tosaka, but I might be wrong. I'm probably wrong.
I'm going from what I copied off my anime list. They've got it with double O's, so.
Okay.
Choppy. Flappy. Cure Egret.
Egret.
And Cure Bloom.
Hard Catch Pretty Cure?
No.
I don't know what the... Pretty Cure Flowers, I don't know what the bloody called.
No, it was Pretty Cure Splash Star. Close.
Okay.
Okay, next one. Benny. Dutch.
Black Magoon.
Rock. Yes.
Right.
Okay, next one. Shinpachi Shimura.
Bleach.
Kagura.
Oh, fuck.
No. Kagura and Gintoki Sakata.
Gintama.
Yes. Okay, next one. Itsuki Koizumi. Mikuru Asahina. Kion. Yuki Nagato.
Oh, Kion.
No, and Haruhi Suzumiya.
Don't remember the full... Haruhi...
That was the full name. I need the full name.
Oh, is it not like The Mysterious Life of... Is it? I've never seen it.
Wow. God damn it.
Mysterious
Anthony.
Life of...
No.
What is
no,
it?
It's not. It's The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya.
I heard Kion, and then I heard Yuki.
Yuki Nagata.
And,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, mistakes were made.
Okay, next one. Kaoru Matsubara. Miyako Gotokuji. Momoko Akatsutsumi. And Mojo Jojo.
Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah, carry on. Finish the title.
Protect the City. No.
Bradley, do you know?
I don't.
Powerpuff Girls Z.
That's right. Okay.
And the last one. Mihail Kiel. Nate River. Misa Amane. Ryuk. L. Lawliet. And Light Yagami.
Oh, Death Note.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So that's one, two,
we don't even know the scores.
Three for Bradley and one for Anthony.
I nearly got a few, but just the long titles. Mysterious Life of whatever.
That'll be 10 years old next year.
Wow.
There'll be a lot of people making note of that.
I've not seen 10 minutes of it.
And starting to feel very old because of it.
I don't think I watched past episode 2. Or maybe I watched half of episode 3. Disappointed. We won't be going back to that.
Phew.
Next year. We'll be going back to this game, but not to that.
That's fine.
But that's the 2006 game taken care of.
I wonder if it's going to hold up on rewatch for me. I suspect it will, but who knows?
There's been a lot less 20th anniversary of Evangelion articles than I was expecting.
Hmm.
Oh shit, you're right.
Give it time.
Oh.
Because it never went away.
Yeah, I think that's it. I need to head to the restroom, so can we wrap this up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. What do you got to plug apart from urinating?
unplug, actually. But I have my podcast, the Anime Now podcast, where I review new anime with all kinds of smart people. The newest episode that will be out soon, just about as soon as I record and edit it, is a double special with Bamboo reviewing Food Wars and Monster Musume.
Blimey.
Yeah. Went all out. I said, okay, this is going to be an explicit episode, and we're going to talk a lot about boobs. You up for that? She said, absolutely. So,
and you know from this episode,
he did. He brought it up.
I do like talking about boobs.
Can we talk about sex, he said? Yes.
Absolutely, anything you want to plug.
YouTube. Search Adventure Bastards. Watch. Oh.
Now, first of all, Anthony, I need to know how much sex it talks
there
is in Adventure Bastards.
Slim to none. There is... Actually, I... Well, very, 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 very little.
I hope so, because there'd be nothing more embarrassing than playing a role-playing game with five guys trying to role-play out sexy.
When one of my characters was a traitor, I went and pretended to have sex with a lady for their sake, and I didn't. I was just discussing a plan. So there's fake sex being talked about. Anyway, there's that. If you search Adventure Bastard on YouTube, there's also Twitter, which is @AntAskYou, and that is all.
I am also on Twitter @Awesome_Engine, and as always, you can find this podcast on dynamiteinthebrain.com, on facebook.com/dynamiteinthebrain, and on iTunes, Stitcher, Player.fm, other aggregation sites. So why not subscribe to one of those, write us a review, so more people can find out about the old hands that are Dynamite in the Brain. Goodbye, we've got to talk about the creepy lady hands, not Uber.
I wanted to forget.
That was Mitsu's hands, right?
It was his mum's hand.
What's
worse is when he has Ray's hands down his pants for two episodes.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.